Hello, real people. Ashley Brewer here, your host for today's episode of Real Stories, Real People. Super excited for this one because I met somebody new and got to know her throughout this episode, Samantha DiCosmo, or Sam as most people call her. She is absolutely beautiful, both inside and out. She's a wife, a rescue dog mom, and a writer who believes in the power of sharing stories to help others feel less alone. Sam was born in Baltimore and has called Maryland home for her entire life. And you guys, her story is absolutely incredible and insane. She literally woke up one day around the age of 15 with a headache that never went away. Never, never, ever. After years and years of doctors finding nothing wrong with her and telling her that it was likely due to depression, she actually began to question whether or not that was the case. As a result, her own mental health began to take a hit. She finally received a diagnosis of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And man, this woman is a survivor. I don't want to give you all of her story because she did it so well herself. So before we begin, a few disclaimers. This show covers a wide variety of topics related to mental health and life in general. These topics can be difficult for some people, so use your best judgment when listening to the show. We are not therapists, counselors, or mental health professionals. Information shared on this show is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never ignore professional medical advice because of something you heard on this show. I am beyond excited about this episode and beyond grateful to have met Sam. I have a feeling that I will call her a friend for a very long time. She is a fighter. She is an overcomer. My new friend, Sam DiCosmo, episode 7, here we go. Welcome to Real Stories, Real People, a personal journal, mental health, and self-improvement podcast where we're shattering stigma one story at a time. We're committed to talking about the tough things in life so that others can find hope. So tune in and hang on, because here we go. And I was a little nervous, like, to connect with you just because I'm reading about you and I'm like, oh, great. She doesn't like small talk, but this I don't see as small talk. Like, this is real talk. So
yeah, not at all. This is what I love. I live for the deep stuff.
All right, Sam, let's jump right in. It's great to have you on Real Stories, Real People.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So we've never met before today, and before we jump into kind of the reason why you're here and the main thing that we're going to talk about, I just want to get to know you a little bit more. Where are you from? What was life like growing up for you as a child? All that fun stuff.
Okay, well, I'm from Maryland. I have lived here my entire life, and I live here with my husband and my dog. We don't have any kids quite yet.
What kind of a dog do you have?
She is a yellow lab mix.
Oh, I see her. Cute.
Yeah, she's actually up there right next to me.
Adorable.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you asked me about what life was like growing up, and I had a wonderful childhood. My parents were really supportive, and all of my issues started when I was about 15 or 16, but before that, I had a great childhood. I was a really happy, healthy kid. Yeah, so everything was good. I was very blessed growing up.
So we came to know each other somehow or connect online because you have a blog where you talk a lot about self-care, mental health, chronic illness, and relationships. I was just sharing with you before we hit record here that I've been going through it in the past few days and I absolutely love it. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
But I know that opening up in that way can be like super, super scary. So on your blog, you mention it's scary to tell our stories. It's taken me years to be brave enough to introduce myself to the world. My story always felt a little too rough around the edges, but if we're honest, aren't we all a little frayed and weathered? First of all, that is absolutely beautiful. So what led you to be willing to share your story both publicly on a blog? Because it's interesting, a blog is like a super private thing, but it's also like, hey, internet, it's out there. Anybody can see this. And to come on our podcast today, what kind of led you to that journey?
It started out, really my blog started out just kind of like as a journal for myself. It was always very therapeutic for me to write. So it started out like that. I was trying to keep my family and close friends updated on what was going on with my health because it's very complicated.
Yeah.
So that's how my blog started. And I didn't share it with many people in the beginning, but I actually started getting these random emails from people who had somehow found my blog and they were thanking me for sharing my story, and they were saying how much they could relate and how it was helping them to feel less alone. So when I started getting those emails, it was so rewarding and so encouraging that I said, I have to write more. I have to really dive in deeper and share my truth. And since then, it has been scary at first. It was very scary to really share such a vulnerable part of me because I like to be as honest as I possibly can. I have just received so much feedback from people just thanking me and saying how much they can relate. And I've just seen how much people want someone else to be able to relate to be able to say, oh, me too. I'm not alone.
Absolutely.
I can relate to that. So that's kind of how everything started. And, you know, I just got such...
No, I relate to what you're sharing a lot. I had a son who passed away when he was 10 months old. And when he was ill and alive, I journaled on Caring Bridge. So that was like my therapy and my way of keeping my family up to date and my friends up to date. And all of a sudden it's like, wait, who are these people? I don't know them. They're acting like they know me. And it's like just a way to share your story in a very intimate way, but also a very therapeutic way. I want to get into a little bit more about like why you're here and why you're joining our podcast today, Real Stories, Real People. And I think this sums it up very well. This is something you wrote on February 13, 2019. I can't remember what it feels like to not be in pain. I'm 31 years old, and for the last 16 years, I've had a headache that has never gone away. I've realized recently that I've spent over half of my life battling this chronic pain. I don't think a lot of people truly understand or believe how this can be. How can someone have a headache all the time? But for some reason, this has been the course of my life. The intensity of my headache waxes and wanes depending on the time of day and about 100 other factors, but it never really fully goes away. And it always gets worse as the day goes on until it's almost unbearable in the evening. Wow. First of all, I was talking to my boyfriend and sharing with him that you were going to be coming on the podcast and telling him a little bit about your story. And he had that exact same reaction. How do you have a headache that lasts for 16 years? And how do you like survive that? So where and how did that journey, you hinted at maybe around the age of 15, where and how did that begin? What did that look like for you?
Well, it just started out, I would just start getting these headaches around like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that I would have them every day. And that very quickly turned into a constant headache that just never went away. So I really just learned, I had to learn how to live with it. I had no other choice. We went to so many different doctors, tried every treatment under the sun, but nothing ever worked for my headaches. No one could ever figure out the cause, which since then we have figured out the cause. But for so many years, we had no idea what was causing them.
Did you ever run into where you felt like people didn't believe you, or you felt like they thought it was all in your head?
Oh, all the time. So many doctors suggested to me that you're just depressed and that's causing your headaches. And I would try to explain to them, no, it's the other way around. I'm having these headaches. They just came out of nowhere. And being in pain all the time is making me depressed. So yeah, there were a lot of doctors who suggested that it was all psychological. So that was very, very hard because I knew deep down that something was wrong physiologically. But a lot of doctors did suggest that it was all in my head. So
explain some of that, because you've been through a little bit of everything when it comes to like the medical realm. I was reading like in the hospital for an excess amount of cerebral spinal fluid or a leak or something like that. What did that journey of going to doctors, they say there's nothing wrong, but then stuff, it sounds like, started to like actually really go wrong. What was that journey like for you?
It was just really, really difficult to never have an answer. I mean, we tried absolutely everything from so many different medications to I even did hypnotherapy at one time.
Yeah.
We were just trying everything that we possibly could. And I was even hospitalized 3 different times at one of the top headache centers in the country. And they pumped lidocaine and other medications into my body for 10 days straight until I started to hallucinate.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've done so much, so many different things, but nobody could ever figure out what was wrong. And it was just always so frustrating because, like I said, I knew deep down that something was physiologically going on.
What year were you 15? What year did that start?
I think that was around 2002 or 2003.
And so you didn't receive your diagnosis until 2018. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were so many different doctors in the beginning. And then I kind of came to a point where I was just fed up with it all. I was tired of doctors. I was just done. So for a couple years there, I really didn't pursue trying to figure it out anymore because I just thought there's never any answers. You know, we always hit a dead end with these things. So I just learned how to live with it.
You probably almost feel a little hopeless. Like when you go to doctors and they tell you you're just depressed and that's why you have this. And you're like, it's the other way around. And you go again and again and you get no answers. I would imagine that's very like self-defeating where you're
absolutely
like, what's the point? Why would I keep looking for an answer? Because it seems there is no answer to be given.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many doctor's appointments I left. And once I got in the car, I would just cry and cry. And it was like, I learned to never get my hopes up, you know, even when we were kind of on the cusp of figuring out what was really going on in 2018, I was like, I don't know. I don't want to get my hopes up because, you know, I always just end up crushed and in tears. So that definitely was my experience.
So you got your diagnosis in 2018. Can you please explain for our listeners what that diagnosis was and what that means for your life?
So I was diagnosed with a rare genetic connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Okay.
And that basically means I was born with it, but we didn't know until last year or the year before. But with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, your connective tissue, which is all over your body, is weak. So my doctor kind of explained it to me as you're not quite glued together as well as you should be.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great explanation. So that has turned out to be the cause of my back issues, which I've had multiple surgeries on my back, extreme fatigue, and my headaches, we actually found out were caused by something called a cerebrospinal fluid leak, which that is very common in people with a connective tissue disorder, because the membrane that surrounds your cerebrospinal fluid is weak and more prone to tears. What happens with a cerebrospinal fluid leak is you have a tear in that membrane, and the cerebrospinal fluid, which is what your brain basically floats in, it's the cushion for your brain, that is not, doesn't have adequate pressure. So that causes pain all the time, which is a lot worse the longer that you're upright.
Is that still something that you're dealing with today?
It is. So I was really blessed to be treated by one of the top doctors in the country that deals with this condition, because not a lot of doctors are well versed in it. I was treated and my severe headache actually went away after that happened. So it was, that was amazing when that finally happened. But there are some side effects of the procedure. I still do have some headaches because my body apparently is still learning how to regulate the cerebrospinal fluid. So my headaches aren't completely gone, but they're a lot better. And my doctor is hopeful that over time, my body will adjust and things will get better and better.
Well, that's great to hear. As I'm even just thinking about doing a podcast with you and reading through your blog, I'm like, oh my goodness, is she even going to be able to like record a podcast with me? I just didn't know what your life was like right now. So how has, since you were diagnosed, how has like your life and the pain you experience on a regular basis changed? Like you got to some of it, it sounds like it's a little bit better, but what other changes have you seen since diagnosis?
Really, it's helped my mental health so much to have a diagnosis, to be able to look back and connect the dots, to be able to say, I knew this was something like this was happening in my body. It's so validating to know that I finally have an answer. I can finally explain it to people who I felt like doubted, you know, how can you have a headache all the time? You know, what's wrong with you?
Did you start to feel like you were a little bit, like you were going a little bit crazy?
Absolutely. I did. You start to doubt yourself after a while. I was like, what if this is all in my head? We can't figure it out. None of these doctors can figure it out. So yeah, you do start to doubt yourself. But since I've gotten my diagnosis, I've just come to a much better place with my mental health. It's really, really helped me. I've connected with other people who have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which has been really great. It's just like night and day. Knowing what's wrong, having a name for it is just, it changes everything.
Well, I think there's got to be just some healing in just knowing that it's not in your head, that there truly is something going on in your body. So you've kind of hinted at how the illness has impacted your mental health and that your mental health has gotten better. Can you talk about some of the experiences you had with your mental health and being affected by this pain and this disease and the lack of diagnosis and the feeling like you're going a little bit crazy? It might tie into the next segment, but maybe not. So I'll just throw that out there. Like, what kind of impact did you see on your mental health?
Well, when the headaches first started, after months and months of going to doctors and not getting any answers, I started to become very depressed, which was something that I had never dealt with before. I never had any kind of depression. I was always a very happy kid. But I did really start getting very depressed. I just felt like my whole life had been turned upside down. My friends didn't understand what was going on with me. I was spending so much time in bed because that was one of the few things that would help my pain, was laying flat. So I just began to feel very hopeless, like nobody was helping me, and I couldn't really see a light at the end of the tunnel. So that's when I actually started having suicidal thoughts when I was about 16, because I didn't know how to cope with my pain in a healthy way.
Are you willing to talk a little bit more about that? Part of my journey in starting the nonprofit that I now am the founder of was learning about a colleague losing their life to suicide. And I've had experienced suicidal ideations as well. And I think it's a topic that's very misunderstood and that deserves a lot more of a voice and sharing the stories behind those ideations to help just the general public start to understand. Are you willing to talk through some of that?
Absolutely. I think it's not an easy thing to talk about, but I think it's so desperately needed. We have to talk about suicide more because it can literally save people's lives. People need to know that they're not alone when they're having these feelings. But for me, yeah, I started when I was 16 feeling like there was no other way out. I thought I was going to be in terrible pain all the time and I didn't know how to cope with it. So that was the first time that I had suicidal thoughts. I did share it with my parents and I was very lucky that they got me into therapy and I learned, you know, how to cope with my pain.
What did that look like? If you don't mind me asking, you sharing it with your parents, was it a conversation? Was it, hey, I'm having negative thoughts. I'm having thoughts about ending my own life. What did that look like for you?
You know, I actually remember reading in a magazine, a quiz about, could you have depression? And I remember taking that magazine to my mom and saying, I think I have depression. Like right. This all, I check everything off of this list.
Right.
So I remember that, but I also remember just opening up and telling my parents how hopeless I felt and how much I just felt like there was no light at the end of the tunnel and just how frustrated and alone I felt. But I also had a close family friend who had committed suicide that year.
Yeah.
So that really affected me, but it also kind of saved me because I saw the devastation that it caused his family. And I knew that I couldn't do that to my family.
Did it ever get to the point of you actually having plans or thinking about it in your head, what you would do or?
It did. I didn't actually have a plan or something that I planned to carry out, but I did think about how could I actually make this happen? You know, because things did get that bad. So that was the first time in my life that I had these feelings. And then there was another time, if you'd like me to talk about that, about 3.5 years ago, my health just got so bad. I started having these problems with my back. I ended up having a ruptured disc and I had to have surgery for that. And then a year later, this problems came back. I had to have another surgery. And I just was so incredibly fed up with my body and not knowing why is this all happening to me? You know, now I'm having these back issues on top of my chronic headache.
You're like, as though I haven't had enough here. Right. What is going on?
I was like, what's going on with my body? Why is this happening? And at the time I was working as a case manager for the Department of Aging and Disabilities. And it was a tough job. And dealing with the headaches and having to be out for the surgeries, it all just kind of got to be too much. And I ended up having to quit my job, which really devastated me. And I just kept sinking deeper and deeper into depression after that. And that's when I started having suicidal thoughts again, which scared me. So I knew that I had felt this way before, but I didn't know where to turn because it seemed like all of my coping skills weren't working. So that's actually when I checked myself into the psych ward.
Yeah.
As a voluntary admission, which was not a good experience for me, but I felt like I had nowhere else to turn. I didn't know what else to do. And somehow during that time that I was in the psych ward, I just decided that my life was worth living and I was going to start fighting like hell to get it back. So that's kind of when things changed when I was discharged.
Was there something that clicked for you when you were in there, or was it just God speaking life over you? Or what do you feel like made that discount or that thought where you were ready to fight for yourself?
It was really a combination. I feel like it was God telling me, you have to keep fighting. I kept hearing this phrase in my head that no one is coming to save you, which sounds very discouraging when you think about it, but it really was true. Nobody was going to save me, not my parents, not my husband, not the psych ward. I had to save myself and I had to fight if I wanted to get my life back. So that kind of, I don't know, just made me start fighting. And I started going back to doctors and searching for answers and really focusing 100% on my health and my mental health.
So during that time, you've hinted at your parents and your husband. What type of support did you have from your people in your life to help you through that time? Because I know for me, I've struggled with depression and there have been times where my family literally looks at me and is like, we don't know what to do with you. Like we literally do not know what to do with you. Like you don't want to be around us. You refuse to get out of bed. You don't want to interact with human beings. Like what do we do with you? What did your support or your group of people look like during that time?
I think that they probably had the same thoughts, the frustration of where do we go from here? You know, how do we help you? But I've always had a very, very supportive family. My parents have always believed that my pain was real and they never believed that it was in my head or that I was making it up. So I've always had great support with them and with my husband. He is just so amazing to have stuck by me through everything that I've been through. I mean, he's never known me when I wasn't in pain.
I was going to say, you were like 15 when this started. So when did you meet your husband?
I met him when I was 19.
And so how does that look? You're meeting a new guy, you're dating, you're like getting to know each other and you're experiencing this crazy pain every single day.
He really met me when I was in the thick of it. I tried to hide it for a while. He actually told me later on that he thought that I was seeing other guys because I would go for like a week without talking to him. Yeah. And I told him, nope, I was in my bed. I was having an affair with my bed. Right. I mean, that's why I wasn't talking to him, you know, for periods of time, because I was dealing with this pain and I didn't want to let him in on it when the relationship was so new, you know. Right. I didn't want him to go running for the hills with all that was going on with me.
So how did you finally decide to let him in? Cause I've been there too, when you're dating and you're struggling and you're like, oh gosh, I can't like show them everything behind the curtain here. Like I got to hold some of it to myself. What did that look like when you finally shared, like, here's what I'm going through? And you kind of probably put it out there like, take it or leave it. And you're hoping they're like, I'll take it, you know?
Yeah, I really just, for a while, I kind of resisted even having a relationship with my husband. At the time when we were dating, when we were first dating, I really was not in a place to have a relationship, but it just happened. I met him and, you know, was falling in love with him. And it was something that I kind of resisted and tried to distance myself from, but it was, I don't know, the connection was just too strong.
Yeah.
And, you know, we fell in love and I pretty much, you know, let him know everything that I dealt with, you know, in the past and what I was dealing with at the time. And there have been many times that I've told him, I would not blame you if this is too much for you.
Right.
I would not fault you at all. And he's always said, I knew what I was getting myself into 100%. And I wouldn't change it. I would make the choice all over again.
Well, so we need more men like him in the world. He sounds like a keeper. We absolutely do.
Yes, but they're out there. And I'd like to tell people who are in the chronic illness community, I've met a lot of younger women who are like, well, can I ever find somebody who's going to love me with all my problems? Yeah. And they are out there. So
you start falling in love. At what point do you guys get married?
We got married about 5 years after we started dating. It was right after I graduated from college. We got married when I was 24. He's a little bit older than me, but,
And were you still like in the thick of your pain and?
Oh yeah. That was a really rough first year of marriage.
And you didn't have a diagnosis yet. So you still had those thoughts in your head, like second guessing yourself, is this real or am I making it up? Am I crazy? Yep.
That newlywed phase that everybody talks about, I was like, what is that?
You know, you're like, I've never experienced that.
Our first year of marriage was extremely hard, but somehow we managed to get through it and things have just gotten better from there.
So, and like, I don't want to give direct advice, but I know one question that I am frequently asked is, because I go and do some speaking about just mental health and depression, anxiety, my own personal journey. One of the things that I'm commonly asked is like, I don't struggle with this, but I know people that do, that struggle with whether it's depression or suicidal ideation. And they say, what can I do to help that person or to support that person? How would you answer that question?
I think one of my best pieces of advice is don't feel like you have to fix the person.
Yeah.
You know, just be willing to sit there with them in their pain and their struggle. Let them know that you believe that it's real, how hard it must be. Empathize with them, but don't feel like it's your job to fix them, because that can be just incredibly frustrating for both people.
Well, and you know, especially when you struggle with something like depression, nobody else can fix you. You know, I have trauma, I have pain, I have things I've been through. Nobody else can go to my therapy sessions for me and walk out with me feeling better. So I couldn't agree with that more. Some of the things that have helped me through the most is just when people show up or sit next to me or send me a text telling me that they love me and that I'm worth it, and just different ways that people show up in your life. So just like one random question for you, because I had a son who had a diagnosis that wasn't very well known by a lot of doctors. Do you ever deal with frustration now that you do have a diagnosis in, if you interact with doctors and the answer might be no. So if it is, that's fine. But where you know more about your disease than they do?
Oh, absolutely. Especially with the cerebrospinal fluid leak, there are so few doctors that actually know about chronic cerebrospinal fluid leaks and how to treat them and just the extent of the pain that they can cause. So I actually come into some doctor's appointments equipped with a brochure from the Cerebrospinal Fluid Leak Foundation. And also I experience it with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, because it is considered a rare disease as well.
And it's hard. I know for me with my son, like some of the doctors, and we loved most of our doctors, so I'm not speaking about everybody, but some of them would look at me like, oh, you're just a mom who thinks you know so much and you know nothing. And I'm like, I know I just learned about this X number of months ago, but I have spent every waking moment researching this, finding specialists, talking to them, finding out how to care for them. And I just felt like I had to be such a strong voice to advocate for him. And since you have a voice yourself, I'm sure you feel like you have to advocate for yourself a lot going into the medical community, just with a lack of familiarity surrounding some of these things.
Oh yeah. I mean, you have to be your own advocate. Doctors, they can't know everything. And with, you know, how insurance is, they usually just don't have the time to really get to know, especially if you have a rare condition or a complex condition. a lot of doctors just don't have the time to really be well-versed in these things. And you have to be your own advocate. You have to do your own research and really stand up for yourself and say, you know, this is what's going on, because I've learned that doctors are not God.
Right.
I mean, no, they can't know everything. And it's a partnership when you are a chronically ill person. It's a partnership with your doctor. You have to work together and you have to be your own advocate. So I absolutely have experienced that.
And so you said growing up that your parents always believed you. They never had a point in time where they were like, maybe this is in your head, or did they have a moment where they maybe teetered on that for a little bit?
I think that they did have some times when they started to think, well, maybe this is all depression. Maybe she's just depressed. I remember my mom saying, you know, I had a friend who was diagnosed with depression and she started having headaches and these different weird things going on with her body. So I think that they did think that it could be all caused by depression. And that was really frustrating for me when that would happen, because I always knew deep down this is not caused by depression.
You just had a feeling there was something more going on. And all along you were right. And that's a lot of years to sit and like wait for somebody to put a name on what you've been experiencing for years and years.
Yeah,
one of the things I love about your blog is that you talk about self-care. And so you wrote a blog on September 30th of 2020 on mindfulness. And this topic is super near and dear to my heart because mindfulness has been part of my recovery journey. And I think when my therapist first brought it up to me, I think I was just thinking like yoga, like meditation, like Zen. And I am a little different than you in that I could talk to people all day, every day. I don't love the small talk, but I can strike up conversation with anybody and everybody, stranger on an airplane, not a problem. We can talk for hours and hours. But so when I thought of mindfulness, I thought of like quiet, and I've learned there are many, many ways to do that. But I want to read this part and then get your reflections on it. And for those of us who are deep thinkers, being mindful can be even more difficult as we tend to live in our heads. I can't even tell you how many times I've driven somewhere, and when I got to my destination, I couldn't remember anything about the drive I just took. I struggle too when it comes to being mindful and present. But with practice, we can incorporate mindfulness into our days and bring more peace into our lives. So, since you said you are a deep thinker, how have you learned to be mindful in your life?
I think just being more aware of what's going on in my body, coming down from being in my head to my body. And something that I always like to do is just use the five senses to just kind of ground myself and be, you know, ask myself questions. Well, what am I seeing right now? What am I feeling? What am I hearing? Just to really be more in tune with your environment and what's going on presently, instead of constantly being in your head, thinking about what could happen in the future or ruminating on what happened in the past, because that's definitely where I tend to live, is in my head. So using those five senses has really helped me to just come back down, be grounded, be more mindful, and live in the moment instead of constantly just living in the future or the past.
I was just saying, I think the psychology of the human mind is absolutely fascinating, because even though we're different people, I relate very much to some of the things that you're saying. I have said a lot of times, and it makes me sound a little bit crazy, but that there are so many thoughts going on in my mind. It's just like my brain will not shut up. And part of what I struggle with is getting myself to that place where my brain can rest and my brain can relax. It was the first thing when I met with my last therapist, the first thing he said to me is, our number one goal needs to be to teach you how to calm your mind and be okay with having your mind
be calm. Like, you don't have to constantly be thinking about everything in the world and how you're going to solve every problem for everything in the world. I think maybe where we differ is I'm a verbal processor. And so I'll take those thoughts that are in my mind and just like word vomit them all over somebody. My boyfriend, he actually started saying, he's like, am I talking to Ashley or am I talking to Ashley's brain right now? And I'm like, that's actually very well put. But you're saying like the importance of being present. What are like some active practices that you use to put yourself back? Like when you say the five senses, how do you put that into action?
I actually have at times put reminders in my phone that will actually go off and remind me, come back down into your body, be present, do your five sense activity, just to bring me back down, because I'm always in my head, just like you. I'm always thinking so much. But I also, and I used to roll my eyes when people talked about meditation, but I'm such a big fan of meditation now. I use this app called Insight Timer, and it has these guided meditations that walk you through your breathing and what you need to do to really calm your nervous system. And I'm such a big fan of it now. It's a really, really beneficial practice for me.
What did you say that was called?
It's called Insight Timer.
Insight Timer. Okay.
Yep.
I'm right there with you. I used to literally roll my eyes because when I heard meditation, all I could think about was being quiet with the thousands of thoughts in my head that still don't shut up, even if my voice is silent. And so that just kind of sounded like torture to me. But now I've found ways where I'm able to take myself out of that thought process. I think the day I like told my therapist I loved him was when he told me that when I exercise, I'm actually practicing mindfulness because I'm no longer thinking about all of the thousands of to-dos that I have or the little mouths I have to feed or the problems in the world. I am solely focusing on me, my body, my mind, my spirit through exercise, and I'm able to calm my mind during those times. So I think everybody has their own way of like implementing that in their daily life, I guess, which is what I'm getting at here. So another question for you on the mental health front, how the heck has 2020 affected you, your mental health, your physical health, your emotional well-being, all of that?
Well, for me, I feel like it hasn't been as hard for me as it might be for other people, because having a chronic illness, you have to learn how to make the most of your time being stuck at home a lot, because you don't feel well a lot of the time. I have a friend that has MS, and we were talking and she said, we're really the experts on this time right now and how to really live your best life when you're stuck at home. So for me, it actually hasn't been as hard as I think it has been for some people. And I'm also an introvert. And so for an introvert, it's like, oh, we have to stay home. That's great. So it has not been as much of a challenge for me as I think it has been for other people.
And that's okay. I think it's affected everybody different. And I feel like that's part of our own unique individual story. And that's part of the, again, behind the psychology and the brain, like how two people can go through the exact same experience and come out of it with very different perceptions or a very different understanding of what happened. It's just fascinating.
It is.
So for people who are listening to this and maybe they're struggling with chronic pain, or maybe they are where you were before 2018 when you received your diagnosis and sitting there feeling like they're crazy or like they're losing their mind or like there just has to be some answer for what is going on, what advice do you have for those listeners?
I think my best piece of advice would be to trust yourself, trust your gut feelings. You know, I always knew deep down inside that something was going on physiologically, and trusting that feeling is so important to carry you through what you're going through. And also just there is hope. I know things can seem so dark. I've been at the lowest of lows, you know, and it can be so hard. I've been there, but my story is just proof that even after so long, you can find answers and you can find healing. And you just always have to hold on to that little piece of hope.
And I think I was reading on your blog, and I know the listeners can't see you, but I'll put a picture up with this podcast, but you're like a very beautiful woman. You do not look sick at all. So I'm sure that like played into people's perception of what is going on. And then you start to kind of internalize some of that too. So I love what you said about just not giving up and that there is hope. And hopefully for if you're listening and that's you, you find your answers soon. So one other question before we start wrapping up here, what got you through some of your deepest, darkest moments of mental health?
I think my faith has really gotten me through a lot. Just having a relationship with God and being able to talk to Him, because so many times I just felt really alone and like nobody understood. And I always felt like God is the one person that understands. So, you know, having that spirituality and that connection has really helped get me through. And also just my support system, the people in my life, I can't thank them enough. My parents and my husband, and I have like three very close friends that totally understand what's going on with me and that I can be real with and that support me. So I've just been very lucky that I have such a strong support system. They've really helped get me through.
I have a small tribe of close people, but I always tell them Jesus only had 12 disciples. So like I'm good with a small tribe. I'm totally good with that.
I love that.
Is there anything else on your story before I ask you my questions in closing that you want to share with our listeners or just that is on your heart or that you feel maybe inspirational or good for somebody to hear?
Encouraging people to open up and let themselves be vulnerable and tell their stories and share, you know, the parts of their life that are that have been the hardest. I've just found so much healing through doing that myself and so much connection with others. It really helps you to form a deep bond with people. Just sharing your truth is so important. And I know it's scary. For so many years, I wanted to start my blog and I didn't do it because I was scared of what everyone would think. But it has been the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. And I've connected with so many amazing people. So I just want to encourage people to open up, let yourself be vulnerable, share your truth. It's really powerful.
I could not agree with you more. So I have a few questions that I like to wrap up with. If you could go back in time and tell a younger version of yourself just one thing, what would you say?
It's funny because I actually have a blog post called Dear Younger Me where I write to my younger self. And I think I'm trying to think of what would be the one thing that would be most important, not letting fear hold you back.
Yeah.
I've struggled with fear for a long time and I can't tell you how much of my life I think I've spent in my head thinking up negative scenarios that have never actually happened. So I think I would just tell my younger self, don't let your fears hold you back. You have so much to contribute to the world. You've got to get past those fears because everything that you want, all the rewards are waiting for you on the other side.
I think that is awesome advice. I had a little smile on my face because you're saying like worst case scenario, my brother-in-law and my sister always play worst case scenario. They'll be like, oh, what's the worst case scenario? And people will just throw out worst case scenarios. I'm like, my mind lives in the worst case scenario. So like,
<Mine too. laughs>
let's not joke about this. And then I promise I didn't give her these questions in advance, but this was legitimately my next question is, what personal prison have you built for yourself out of fear?
Living in my head, you know, and not being able to live life as fully as you can when you're in the present. And, you know, we talked about that mindfulness. When you have so much fear and anxiety and you live in your head, I feel like you miss out on so much. So yeah, just having fear has held me back from so much. And I've always worried so much what other people think of me. That's been something that I've struggled with for years. And I'm finally breaking down those walls of, you know, what will they think? What will this person think? If I say that, you know, what will they think? Just being okay with who I am and learning to love myself and not living with that constant fear of what's everybody going to think. That's definitely a prison that I've put myself in that I'm slowly breaking out of.
I think we are more alike than we realized at the beginning of this conversation. As you're talking about like building up walls, and there is, for me, when I finally started like sharing my truth with people and sharing more about who I am, there's a freedom that comes with that. When you're finally able to accept it yourself and then verbalize it to another human being, I think it's so freeing, and receiving God's grace too, that like we're humans and we're not perfect and we're way, way, way hard on ourselves. I mean, I tend to think everybody's thinking something about me. Well, most people are focused on themselves. They're not thinking about me, Ashley. Like, stop telling yourself that. So one more question for you. What brings you joy today?
Just being able to connect with other people and really being able to help people by sharing my story and giving them hope, which I've done through my writing. Writing is what brings me the most joy. It's when I'm happiest, just encouraging other people and connecting with people through our shared journeys and our shared stories. That's really brought me a lot of joy.
You said it so eloquently on your blog. You wrote, "All I know for sure is that I have to do something with this pain. There has to be a purpose, a reason for all of this. And that is why I am telling my story now. There just has to be some kind of purpose in this pain." Those words are very beautiful, and I think that is exactly what you just described. So how can people find your blog, and how can people support you?
Well, my blog was born from that thought that there has to be a purpose in pain. My blog is apurposeinpain.com.
Awesome.
And I'm also on Instagram, which has been really fun, and I share a lot of encouragement there. If you go to my blog, there is a link to my Instagram. So just apurposeinpain.com is where I share a lot of my truth and my heart, and I would love for you to join me there.
And Sam is an amazing writer, you guys. So check out her blog. And we talked a little bit before this about possibly having her guest author on our blog for Could Have Been Me. So Sam, I just appreciate you taking the time to meet with a stranger that you've never met and be willing to share your story publicly and verbally and just be raw and honest with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a wonderful experience, and I just love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Ashley. If you would like to get involved with our nonprofit organization, Could Have Been Me, simply visit itcouldhavebeenme.org and click on Get Involved at the top of the page. We would absolutely love to connect with you. We would love to hear your story and potentially feature it on an upcoming episode of Real Stories, Real People, or help you find other ways that you can get involved and help us shatter stigma one story at a time. There's more to come next week. Stay tuned.